tricked you. What's going on? Who knows? I'm about to break it down for you guys. It's Wednesday. It's Action Movie Anatomy. And of course, it is The Gray. Let's do some improvisational comedy. We'll see you in just a second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. It's my show now. This is the Andrew Guy Show. Every Wednesday, 2 p.m., we're here to talk all things Andrew. I'm just kidding, guys. My good friend, my co-partner, my co-host, he got pulled over. He did. He got pulled over. He was texting. He was actually talking to me about the Schmodown, of as we do, while driving. I believe he even said in the carpool lane, so he's going to have quite a hefty bill there. So if you want to go donate to me on our Patreon, you can do that for Ben. I won't give him any money. But yeah, he should be joining us in just a minute. Guys, this is Action Movie Anatomy. It's Wednesday. It's The Gray, one of my absolute, I want to say favorite, but maybe forgotten about films. It's a movie I hadn't revisited in so long. I'm going to go over here. It feels weird being on that wide. But I do have Marissa Serafini in the booth. Marissa, how you doing today?
I'm great, Andrew. Look at us. We showed up.
We did. Look at us. We're on time. We showed up. No tickets.
That's right.
We're doing our job.
Yes, we are.
Guys, welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network. This is the Network Talk. Wow, that was tough. Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network. The network dedicated to talking movies and pop culture by the bucketfuls. I'm Andrew Guy. That is usually my host, Ben Bateman. Ben Bateman Media. If you want to follow him on Twitter, you guys can find me at Andrew Guy. And yeah, this is Action Movie Anatomy. We do this every single show or every single week on Wednesday. We've done about 200 of these shows. We're getting very, very close to episode 200, but we're not quite there yet. Gonna be a very special episode, I'm sure. I got the chat open here. I haven't been able to look at it because I'm trying to entertain everyone all by myself. But I'll be taking a peek in there in a minute. Guys, this is Action Movie Anatomy. Most movies on the show adhere to four basic rules. We've kind of stretched those rules a little bit over the years. Rule number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. Now, this is kind of tough because in The Gray, you know, Liam definitely plays by his own rules throughout the movie. It's clear that he's kind of put himself in the position to be exactly where he wants to be in life, based off of maybe the hurt or the past. So the reason that I say it's tough, though, is because he gets in a plane crash, then he's out in the wilderness, and he's getting hunted by wolves. So he's not really playing by his rules. He's playing by the rules of Mother Nature. Kind of not someone you really want to go up against, but we'll get into that. So not really a hit on rule number one. Rule number two, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people, beings, creatures, wolves in the room. Now, once again, the enemy, the antagonist of this film is Mother Nature, basically in the form of these crazy killer wolves. And of course, Mother Nature's cold. You know, you see the poor people out there freezing to death. Rule number three, the movie is driven by a police, military, or political figure. I mean, we can kind of say that he's a mercenary. I mean, he is hired to go out and kill wolves specifically just to protect people drilling out there. And we even go a step further and say that those people are drilling for the government. Ah, see what I did there? And rule number four, the movie contains a minimum of one explosion. Is there an explosion in this movie? Guys, chat, people in the chat. I want to see what people are saying here. I want to read this, but then I'll just be quiet for so long. Guys, is there an explosion in the movie? I don't believe so. But yeah, we'll talk about that in a little bit. So guys, as we always do on the show today, we're going to be covering all the things that we normally do. Fist pump, thesis statement, favorite line. We are also going to be covering a couple things. Buy or sell on Liam Neeson or Frank Grillo. This is the kind of a game that we're going to be saying. If you could take or invest money in the rest of Frank Grillo's career or the rest of Liam Neeson's career, would you do it or not? Or you kind of think that they've kind of run their course? We'll be talking about that. And we will also be having a little bit of Steven calling in today, I believe. I think him and Liam Neeson and Gerard Butler have the same agent, but we'll see. We'll see about that. Couple Patreon shout outs here. Mike Deacon, a brand new Brigadier General of the Action Army. He just threw down $100 towards the Andrew Guy appreciation page. Actually, big shout out to Mike Deacon. And of course, Adrian.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Man, this is where I need Ben. Quietkowski. So, Mike and Adrian, as always, I salute you because I'm here. Marissa, should we hop into the trailer?
I think we should.
All right, thank you.
There's not a second goes by when I'm not thinking of you in some way.
I appreciate you, Ben, with your still breaking the law while driving here. There is the explosion in the plane crash. I don't know how I forgot that. There's just so much pressure on me sitting here all by myself. That plane crash is gnarly. It is like when they all like drop and hit the ceiling and then they drop back down and they're all like around like, holy shit. It is absolutely insane. This movie has some really crazy, holy shit moments in it.
All my love for you. All my love for you. Leave nothing in my heart. Fill me only with what I need to fight.
Let's do some improvisational comedy.
I am Liam Neeson.
pretty sweet trailer. A little vague, but I get it. It's probably like more of a teaser. But I do. I like it. I think it would have sold me on the movie. I was supposed to keep stalling until Ben got here. He's supposed to be here already. We're about to get into the collaborative parts of the show, so I'm just going to hop in first. Guys, we're going to be talking thesis statement on the show. Thesis statement's your biggest, boldest thought about the film. If you had, if you were at a party, the Gray party, a party that was focused solely on this film, and you could only say one thing, one opinion all night long, what would you say? And you got to be able to back it up. So I'm going to hop in first because, as you can see, I'm by myself. It's tough because this movie, while being very, very good and very compelling, it's hard to say it's the greatest this or the greatest that because there's so many other films out there that are so similar to it that kind of hit on the same notes. I mean, we talked about The Edge. You know, there's other movies about being trapped in the cold and Everest and things like that. But I think for me, and it's tough because Ben's not here, and I'd really like to kind of bounce this idea back with and back and forth with him. But you guys are the fans. You've watched so many episodes of the show. You should be able to do the exact same thing for me. I believe this is the most realistic movie that has ever been covered on AMA. Yeah, that is my biggest, boldest thought about this movie. Now, I went through and I kind of looked at the catalog of our movies, and we've done a lot of movies that are based on true stories, and we've done a lot of movies that are really, really based in reality. But this movie specifically, it just feels, first of all, you always feel like you're at the mercy of everyone else in the film. It never feels like the hero or the leader or the protagonist is just going to get out of it because they're them. Because Liam Neeson is in a movie, he's going to survive. It doesn't really feel like that. And the wolves are horrifying. They're absolutely horrifying. And they talk about, you know, their 300-mile hunting radius. And if you're in that radius, you know, they'll hunt you. And it's not even about food. It's just about establishing dominance and territory. And then you look at the wind and the cold. And you look at the drowning death and the guy that freezes to death at night and the falling. Everything about this movie is so real and heartbreaking. And that's the other thing, too, is like when Flannery goes down, it's heartbreaking, but that's exactly what would happen. That's exactly what would happen to the weakest person in the pack, to these wolves. They're looking at this group traveling across this frozen tundra, and there's one guy in the back. He's like 50 yards behind everyone else. Of course he's the one to go first. Of course you go after the weakest link in the chain, right? And Man, I love it. You know, the guy in the middle of the night going to the bathroom early on by the train. He gets attacked by the wolves. You see Liam, like, Liam from a distance looking at that woman. Like, I think her head's getting eaten by the wolf. And she's, like, kind of whimpering. It's super, super freaky. And then he just gets, like, bulldozed, tackled by this wolf into the plane. And the other thing that I love, and we're talking realism here, is that people don't just die immediately. They don't just, you know, they don't heal immediately and they don't die immediately, which I think is so important. It shows the realism behind it. Yeah, maybe a wolf will bite you a couple times and claw you up. He might not kill you, but he will fuck you up. Your life is not in a good place after this. I believe that is probably my thesis statement, and I'd love to hear some counters here, guys. Like, I'd love to hear what you guys have to say about, like, whether or not you believe it is or is not the most realistic movie that's ever been covered on AMA. I mean, that's a pretty big thing. We've done things like Lone Survivor and Deepwater Horizon, and, you know, there's a ton of movies out there that are just kind of like, they're totally fathomable, totally feasible, and some of them, like I said, are based off true stories, but for some reason, this one hit home more than ever. Gonna hop in here and read a couple of these. This is the most personal performance of Liam Neeson's career. That's interesting. I mean, it's hard to say that because of Schindler's List, right? Like, Schindler's List is maybe one of the most, like, hard to watch movies ever, because it's based in reality. He's playing Oscar Schindler. It's true. It's heartbreaking. It's heart wrenching. I like the thesis, but I don't know if I completely agree with you. This is the next one. This is the best Liam Neeson movie, period. By that, I don't mean this is the best movie, can't compare it to Schindler, but the best Liam Neeson type of action movie. That, I think I have to agree, because I like Taken enough, and all the other movies that he's... Hello! Oh my God, who's calling in? Who is this? Who is this?
It's Danuzio.
Danuzio! Hey! What's up, buddy?
What's going on? Not much. How are you?
I love it. Okay, first of all, Marissa, you are a saint. Ben, you are still in the live chat driving and texting. I love it. But Danuzio, my man, this is the perfect person to call in, because I actually just talked about your thesis statement online and why I actually don't agree with it. So maybe you can reiterate. You said, verbatim, you said, this is the most personal performance of Liam Neeson's career. Elaborate on that for me a little bit, brother.
Why I said that was because of Natasha Richardson's death a year and a half or so earlier, 2009. I think he really drew from that, and that whole death of his character, Ottaway's wife, drew the whole movie. And so confronting mortality, death, I think everything came from that one moment. And I could feel it, like, through his eyes. It was, like, really the cold, cold breath that just totally made me feel that it was really everything that happened to him recently went into this performance.
You know, that is actually you're right. You are 100% right. And I forgot about that point, because there's so much going on today. I forgot to mention that, or I mentioned why I thought that was such a great thesis, because I read that Joe Carnahan had actually talked to Liam about channeling that, the death of Natasha Richardson. And you're so correct. You can see the pain in his eyes. And that's one thing throughout this movie that I really, really find kind of mesmerizing, is you really see so much hurt in Liam without actually him just talking about it, right? So many movies, they just talk about the pain.
Oh my God. I mean, you can't even tell. In the beginning, you see it start to, you know, something's going on in his life, but you're not sure exactly what. Then he's faced with this such a tragedy going on, but he gears himself up to, like, will everybody else to live. But that pain is just always there in every single moment, from the fireside chat, from every confrontation with people over, like, the wallets and everything else. It's all this deep-seated pain that's going from, like, 0 to 60 in, like, 2 seconds, whether it's rage, whether it's desperation, whatever it is. It's all seated from the internal pain. It's just, oh, I was so shocked when I saw this performance. I never had in a million years thought it was going to be this.
I completely agree, and I feel like his performance is kind of overlooked a lot in this film. I mean, it's just kind of thrown away as just like kind of a whatever action movie, survival movie. Why do you think this movie doesn't really get the attention and the praise that it deserves? Because going back and rewatching it, I watched it maybe on Sunday, and then I watched it again on Tuesday, because I was like, this movie is so sweet. I just want to watch it. I just want to watch it again. So why do you think this movie is so forgotten?
I think part of it is the way it was marketed. I totally missed it the first time through. I honestly thought it was this trashy Neeson action movie. Not that there's anything wrong with a trashy Neeson action movie. I love the Takens and everything else, but I kind of thought it was like The Edge Part 2. It was going to be just Neeson in the maybe in the Hopkins role. So it wasn't going to be that important of a movie, not that poetic of a movie.
Right, and you
but
worry about
get
like
your ass in the gear.
People taking things too seriously in these films if they take themselves too seriously. But what was so great about this movie is that it actually did take itself so incredibly seriously, and I love it. So, Danuzzo, last thing before I let you go, what did you think of my thesis?
Actually, I'd be honest with you, I missed your thesis.
All right, whatever. Get off the phone. I don't want to talk to you anymore. I'm just, hey, look who it is. Ben, the boss, Bateman, showing up whenever the fuck he wants to because he doesn't care about me or the show anymore. No, all right, let everyone know. How you doing? Good to see you.
Well, I'm poorer. I'm more traffic citationed. I'm not pleased.
I can completely imagine. It's good to see you. Danuzzo, are you still on the phone?
I am.
Okay.
He's gone.
Yeah. I was going to say, okay, so Marissa was nice enough to throw up the phone number. And,
yes.
Yeah.
Marissa, how are you?
I'm great. Now that you're here.
Great. Thank you. This is weird. I'm on this side.
I know. It is weird. Really quickly.
You're getting my worst side.
Really quickly before we let Paul go, you guys met this weekend.
No. We didn't meet this weekend. What are you talking about?
Danuzzo? Oh, no. I must be thinking of something. I got you mixed up with Belford
He posted the picture from when he was out here in L.A.
Oh, I thought, okay, well.
Yeah, I haven't visited my aunt, my cousin in L.A.
Yeah, yeah.
Thinking I kind of saw
he sandbagged it for
kind
a long
cool
time.
Down.
God.
It was a red herring.
Well, glad that I wasn't here for it. Yeah. Danuzzo, thank you so much for calling in. I love you, man. Thank you for saving me today. And, of course, we'll talk soon, brother.
Yeah.
We salute you.
Thanks, Paul.
Absolutely, man. Take care.
All right. All right, I'm here. Wow, so that was crazy. So we're talking about The Gray. I actually was watching and listening and illegally in the live chat.
Yeah. Well, no, I love that. I love that, like, literally I was commitment. Telling people what was going on, and I saw your name pop up in the live chat.
Yeah.
Feels so good to be in the power chair over here, Ben.
Good. That was an interesting thesis on Paul's part about talking about Natasha Richardson. I hadn't really thought about that, but it's a good point. It's a very personal role for him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you heard. I was saying how Joe Carnahan actually told him to pull from that to help his performance. But, yeah, it's weird. You see, like, so much broken pain in Liam.
Yeah.
And you don't really know why. And I actually enjoy that they kind of pull the switch at the end that she has cancer or whatever.
Right, because the whole time you think that he's kind of a bad dude and she left him.
Right, because it's like the next scene is him in a bar, people fighting, he's drinking, and he's holding a gun.
Right. He's going to kill himself, right. So you're like, he must be a really bad – because he says at the beginning, criminals, like, you know, all that stuff. So, yeah, that's interesting. I kind of had a thesis that it was a little bit more in line with what – actually, it wasn't Danuzzo's. Who said – whose thesis was this is the best Liam Neeson movie?
The best Liam Neeson action movie or whatever.
Yeah,
that was Jarvie.
So that's an interesting one. And that's like, and my phone is ringing. I am just
look,
doing.
Look, this is unbelievable, guys.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. You're lucky I like you so damn much.
Yeah, or sorry. I just came in straight from the road.
I used to.
Unprofessional. So what I was going to say was, mine was kind of in line with that. But the more I've thought about it, I don't know how 10 years later, Taken was released today, 10 years later. I'm not sure how you can really say anything other than Taken is the best Liam Neeson action movie, just because...
It was released today?
Today, 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It just that feels like that's actually correct. So I was trying to sort of put into words what I think the best thesis for this movie, and I think the one I came to, and this relates to a conversation that you and I are going to have later today, which is on the Action Guys. We're doing a whole show about wilderness survival movies. This is the most satisfying ending to a wilderness survival movie ever made. And the reason I say it is that they fight to survive. The whole movie, they're trying to stay alive. And they keep dying off one at a time. And in the end, he just, I mean, spoiler, you guys shouldn't be watching this if you haven't seen it. He just, like, smashes bottles, tapes a knife to his hand, and is like, I'm going out.
I'm
going
to die.
It's obvious that in real life, I would not be able to kill these wolves. This is not the same as Taken, where I'm, like, running around on a boat and, like, shooting a sheik. Like, this is just, like, not that. This is, like, I'm... old, this is nature, and these wolves are in their home. I'm gonna die.
I'm in their den, and the alpha wolf has just claimed me as his bitch.
Yeah, and it's sweet. It's just, I can't think of a more satisfying ending to any movie in the genre, because, like, even, like, Into the Wild, where, like, he dies at the end.
Right.
That's not, spoiler. That's not a more satisfying ending. It's a good ending. But...
I was thinking, like, maybe if we're talking wilderness survival, you could maybe say 127 hours. because... of the way that that ends. But oh, dude, I totally forgot to say, because I was just, you know, trying to do your job over here.
It's harder than it looks.
Yeah. Well, when you don't have a co-host, that's especially hard.
This Friday, Ben and I, we're starting to do this thing. We're trying to always make Action Guys and AMA correlate. So this Friday on the Action Guys, you know, it'll go up at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the Collider Podcast Network. We will be talking about the all-time or our all-time greatest wilderness survival films.
Yes, and some of you guys who have been with us a long time know, obviously, that The Edge is a favorite of ours. We love that movie. There's a lot of movies that kind of are in that genre, so we have a whole episode of The Action Guys on that topic that we are going to be doing on Friday. At 1 o'clock, you guys are going to get to see the live stream, the public actual presentation of the Schmodown live event in New York. That's on Collider, and then at 3 o'clock on the Collider Podcast Network, it's on Schmoes, but you'll whatever. You'll see our show go up. So at 1 o'clock and at 3 o'clock, there's two awesome things to watch on Friday.
I'm excited to watch the live. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I mean, I hear it's incredible. Everybody has told me that it was an amazing event. Like, I can't wait. I streamed a little bit of it. I was in the live chat a little bit because we are patrons. We pay for it.
Oh yeah.
So I was able to watch a little bit of it, but it was only up for 24 hours, so I didn't get to go back and like watch from the beginning.
Yeah, I was. I think I was working during it, so I didn't get to watch it. But yeah, that's supposed to be great. I'm really excited to see who comes out on top. I'm pulling for Janine and Irwin because those are the people that I love. Dan Morrell, you know, I mean, he's not bad. I've just, you know, beat him twice. Yeah. Or I TKO'd him. Wait, is this... Oh, okay. So I think I'd heard about this but totally forgotten about it. There's a post-credit scene where it shows... Marissa, if you could pull this up, that would be absolutely amazing. Could you type, maybe look up post-credits scene, The Gray? Since after the credits, they actually show Neeson's head on the wolf, and the wolf stops breathing. When I first read that, I was like, you mean Liam Neeson's head is on the wolf's body?
So Liam wins. And then gets eaten by the
Says, kids. And you can't tell whether Neeson is alive or dead. I'm very curious about that, because in the original cut or edit, they had Liam fighting the wolf.
Interesting.
And it was supposed to be in the extra special features and all that, but then Carnahan just decided completely against it.
Yeah. How do you feel about the CGI and the wolves? How do you like it?
It's like hit or miss.
Yeah, it's 50-50, right?
Yeah, because there's parts of it that's really good, and there's other parts where they just look like computerized CGI wolves. Yeah. How long is this, Marissa? I can't see a minute.
It's only about 20 seconds.
Oh, perfect. Can you just play it right now?
Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you.
There's another YouTube clip I'd like to play as well. This wolf and I.
Oh, here we go. Yeah. I didn't even see him.
That was it, huh?
I didn't even see him. I'm too blind.
Do you see him?
Yeah, I feel pretty blind also.
Is he in the shot, Marissa? Or is it just the wolf breathing?
Maybe it's just the wolf breathing.
Huh. Well, that's cool
is
enough.
The wolf breathing, it looks like a little bit of scalp here and there, but I don't know.
Hmm. Got
interesting.
It.
Yeah, so, but I would say it's the most satisfying ending, just because the fact that the final fist bump moment of him with the bottles and the knife, it's such a, like, he, like, did it, and I literally, like, jumped out of my chair.
It's sick!
It's like, oh my god, this movie. Like, it's like Taken with Wolves. Like,
well, and what I also love about it is that they, he starts taking out the backpack and getting all the tools and supplies out, and you're like, oh my gosh, are they really gonna try to make him, like, do something legitimate right now?
Is he gonna beat this wolf?
Yeah, and it's and then all of a sudden you see him like taping a knife to his hand, taping glasses to his hand. You're like, oh, he's gonna die. Like,
he's fighting to the death. The taped glasses, like, one of them probably is gonna break while you hit.
Easy.
It's gonna cut into your hand.
Yep. Like, it just seems like a bad idea.
Yeah, it seems way cooler looking than actually being practical at all. Yeah, exactly. There you go. So anyway, guys, that's gonna wrap up our thesis statements.
You know what, Ben, I'm actually on this side of the table. Yeah. If you'd let me take it. You know what, guys, that's actually gonna wrap up our thesis statements. We're gonna hop into the next section of the show. It's gonna be fist pump. I'll let you take this one.
This moment is that moment in a movie, something happens, you look around, you're like, are you seeing this right now? This is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And this movie is laden with them. You want to call your buddy and tell him just like how good it is. I actually called Drew.
You did.
Yeah, during this film. There's just a lot of moments where they really like tap into this like era of Liam Neeson well. I don't really understand where it came from, this era of Liam Neeson. And we're going to get to it when we kind of talk about his career, just like what happened and how it happened and why it happened.
Yeah, it's one of the most fascinating turns in a career ever.
Ever. But as far as fist pump moments go, I mean, there's a lot. I think probably for me, my ultimate fist pump is the one we keep talking about with the bottles and the knife. That to me was like that was like a huge one for me. The other one, though, that I called you I called you on is when he's first arguing with Grillo, and Diaz is like, I'm going to keep the wallet if I want.
Yeah.
And he's like, what's he say? He's like,
in just about 2 seconds, you're going to start fucking bleeding a lot. Yeah, he's like, and you're going to swallow a fuckload of blood. And you're going to smell a lot of blood, all for a fucking billfold.
He's like, he throws it back at him. You're like, Jesus.
Yeah.
It was horrifying. He's like, in just about a second, I'm going to start beating the shit out of you. You're going to taste a lot of blood, and I'll be over a fucking billfold. And you're just like, wow.
This is intense.
This is intense. He hates that, man.
Grillo's great in this.
Yeah.
He really is, like, a good, like, weasel.
He is.
Shit weasel.
He's, yeah, exactly. I mean, this movie is funny, because, like, if you look at what Joe Carnahan's directed, and we'll talk a little bit more about it when we get to Carnahan's career, he's a total, like, dude's dude. It makes sense that Frank Grillo would be in a Joe Carnahan movie,
and multiple
Joe Carnahan movies, right? There's it feels like trying to make the Expendables legitimate or something like that is what his types of movies are.
Yeah.
He's, like, really into, like, tough guys and martial arts and action, and he's not really into, like, subtlety. He's, like...
Subtlety is not his forte.
It's adjacent to, like, the feeling of, like, say, a movie like Warrior, which makes sense. It makes sense that whole crew kind of knows each other.
Right.
But it's not the same, because it's trying to be artistic in the same way. But I could argue that The Gray is, like, the analog action movie to The Warrior being a fighting movie in some ways. Like,
yeah, that's fair.
Because, like, The Gray has some silly moments, just like Warrior has some silly moments. But then also, when they go for it, emotionally in both movies, it works. You know, the poem, the moment where they introduce themselves, there's some really good moments in The Gray where it feels like a pretty legitimate movie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's what I was saying. I think when you walked in, I was talking about how it takes itself so seriously and how I think that it actually succeeds in doing that. I like that. So we got Nathaniel Murga, new name in the chat I haven't seen before. The scene where he tells them to stare back and all you see are the glowing eyes.
Yeah, that's sick.
I love that. Was actually maybe going to be mine, so I had to read it as yours. I love it. AJ Lancaster literally just joined the Action Army, got Patreon today, and Schmodan and Team Action were priority number one. Yo, we...
Salute you.
Thank you so much for joining. I actually just got the email that you did
so
that.
Yeah, I just saw it pop up on my phone here.
So awesome to have you in the live chat as well. Let's see. We got Danuza here talking about Frank Grillo's death, his favorite, which is The View.
Yeah, that's a great moment. I was going to say the other one for me. Did you already do yours or no?
No, not yet. Okay. I'm just reading through these. And yeah, and then Jarvie, he actually says the same thing. The way Grillo finally gives up, Neeson doesn't argue. He understands that every man has his limits, and Grillo reached his... Yeah, they're so good. I mean, I absolutely love the glowing in the eyes.
Yeah.
I actually like when they kill Flannery, even though it's super sad.
Yeah.
I just think it's, like, such a it shows their dominance, and, like, they're just, like, they're hunters. This is what they do. This is all they've ever known, and that guy's the weakest guy, and now he's dead.
Yeah, right.
I love that, but I actually think, as crazy as it is, and I've probably watched this scene maybe 10 times since... Yeah. It's Liam Neeson sitting by the fire talking about his dad in the poem.
And the poem, yeah.
It's so good. He never, like, breaks his vision from what he's seeing, which is, like, this vision of his life until the very, very end when he talks about reading at his funeral. And you get the looks from all the guys. It's just, like, you talk about, like, actor porn.
Yeah.
That's actor porn. Like,
yeah.
It's just beautifully well delivered. He takes his time. The editing throughout. It's just wonderful movie making. And I, that scene just got me. It, like, even right, I was watching with my roommate and a friend of mine, and I just was like, sorry, I gotta watch it again. Like, in the middle of watching it.
I agree. I mean, it was definitely one of those moments, and this will happen sometimes, right? In a movie like this, if a movie uses a score too often to inform you of how you're supposed to feel in certain scenes, I find it to be less effective. When a movie chooses its moment to use a score like that and to put and drop the music in there, it's so much more effective, because it's not at all what that movie has felt like to that point. But it's like the swell of emotion. So that's why it works so well when you hear it. And then again, when it starts at the end, as he's looking at the wolf and he starts reciting the poem.
Yeah. Hey, Marissa, can you clean up the chat for us real quick? There's just someone in there just being a pain in the ass. You know, so, that weird Shazam thing that keeps tagging us.
Oh, yeah. What is that?
It's so weird.
I don't know what that is.
I don't either.
They don't want to be us.
So, but yeah, I think it's super effective, the use of that. The other one that I was going to throw out there, too, and some of these favorite line, and I'll come up with it later, but I'll decide later. I have three. But for Fist Pump, early in the movie, when the plane goes down and the guy's dying, it's like gnarly. He's like, blood's like, shooting out. And Liam,
you're going to die now. That's what's going to happen.
It's going to wash over you.
It's going to wash over. Just keep looking at me.
Yeah.
Look at my eyes.
And, like,
don't look away.
Like, Liam's just,
you'll
like,
be feeling
sweet.
Warm soon.
Yeah. He's just, like, he's like in his element in this movie. He's like very much the alpha. Like he's very much the alpha of his group. And
I like, would you say he's like very much in his element in this movie?
Yeah.
Like this is the Liam Neeson role. Like this is maybe the most perfect Liam Neeson role for his older part of the later half of his career.
Cause it's even better in some ways than Taken, because like Taken, he's like superhero level of angry. Like the moment when he's talking to Diaz by the fire about being scared, and he's like, if you're not scared, you're an idiot. And he's like, I'm terrified. Just like that whole sequence is right. So much more like appropriate for the character. He's tough. He's wise. He's older. He's smart. He's vulnerable.
Well, it's exactly. It's the vulnerability and the honesty of his character where it's just like, no, like this just doesn't, like we have to leave the train or the plane. We have to go into the woods. It's the only way we're going to serve, like all these things. And then I love, he's like, well, if no one's going to go with me, I'm going to grab as much shit as I can carry and I'm leaving.
And Carnahan was literally like that thing that you say to Maggie Grace on the phone. You're like, they're going to take you. He's like, just say that to this guy about dying.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the same thing.
You're going to die. This is what's going to happen.
It's
going to
wash over you.
He
starts saying that to Maggie Grace. You're going to die.
Like, what? Dad? Okay. So let's get into star profiles. This is fascinating. Let's talk about Grillo first, because his is a little bit less interesting. He did Mother's Day in 2010, My Soul to Take in 2010, and of course, our favorite, Warrior in 2011. Frank Campana, very unorthodox trainer. And then on the other side of it, you've got maybe the most fascinating career in Hollywood. Not unique, but fascinating. The Next 3 Days in 2010.
Yeah.
The Chronicles of Narnia, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, where he played Aslan.
Yeah, Golden Lion.
And then, of course, Unknown.
Oh, that's a good one. It's got January Jones in there.
She's a very talented actress.
She's really good. So this was her moment, too, when her agent was like, yeah, the world loves you. We're going to get you some roles.
Right. Was this right after First Class?
Same year, I think. I think 2011 is the same year. Might be 2012, but I think it's the same year, actually. For sure. So what I was going to do here is pull up some Liam Neeson love here so we can kind of look at the before and the after.
Oh, yeah.
I think this is important for us to do.
That shot, though. Look at that picture.
Oh, yeah. He's the truth. So if you look at Liam and you go back to before he was in Taken, right? You go to the mid-2000s. So this is a guy who basically in the 90s, 80s and 90s, you know, he's an up-and-comer. He's not American. He's talented. He's in Schindler's List. It's a big deal.
He's simply Ducat.
A lot of the stuff that he was doing, right? Everything from Nell to Rob Roy, Michael Collins. Like, he was just being put in movies where he was, you know, Gangs of New York, a period piece actor with a lot of talent. People knew he could handle a role. And he was never the star. Mm-hmm. He was always supporting. Even Kinsey in 2004. Did you ever see that?
No.
It's pretty good. He plays Alfred Kinsey. It's like an Oscar contender type of movie.
I remember that.
It's pretty good. But, like, that's the kind of thing he was getting, right? So Batman Begins in 05 gives him kind of this, like, all right, you're kind of an action guy. Let's put you in this role.
It's literally Batman Begins and Kingdom of Heaven, where the director of Taken was just like,
and Seraphim Falls in 06, like it's a Western with Thomas Hayden Church. He's like a little bit of a tough guy in that movie.
Yeah, it's a bad movie.
And then all of a sudden, Luc Besson is like, we're gonna do this movie. Pierre Morel's gonna direct it.
Yep.
Let's try you out in Taken. And 10 years ago today, this movie comes out. And I mean, we all remember the trailer. Like,
yeah.
I remember
it was sweet, and you were like, what the hell is Liam Neeson doing in this movie?
And the trailer was so sweet because it has the speech.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what's this going to be?
Well, and that's the thing that we kind of realize, right, as we've done this show for so long, and I think Denzel is maybe one of the best. I mean, Denzel has way, way more of a different type of swagger.
Yeah.
But it literally is like, oh, okay, let me get a very, very good actor.
Yeah.
A very talented actor.
Yeah.
And it makes sense why Tony Scott and Ridley both co-produced on this, right?
Yep.
Tony Scott. Is you're like, I'm just gonna get a very, very, very good actor and put him in like a moderately good action movie with a moderately good script, and he's going to elevate this movie so much. Because if you just put like, hell, Charlie, because originally it was supposed to be Bradley Cooper in this role. I think if you even put Bradley Cooper back in 2011, or let's say now, you put like Charlie Hunnam in it, it's not good. It's not a good movie.
No. Definitely not. This movie needs the depth of Liam Neeson. So going back to 2008, as well as some other dramas that he does in there, like he does do some stuff. He's in Silence. He shows up in A Monster Calls. He shows up
in... He is Qui-Gon Jinn.
Yeah. He shows up in a few things, you know, in the last 10 years that are trying to be legitimate, but he has 11 movies that in the last 10 years that I would classify as the trashy action to worse trashy action or better is what I mean to say. So starting with 2008, he's got Taken. 2010, he stars in the A-Team. You keep going here. He's got The Gray and Unknown in 2011. Taken 2 in 2012.
Isn't Nonstop a movie?
Oh, that's different. You're thinking,
who's that?
No, I think Nonstop is later. It's later. He's in Clash of the Titans and Wrath of the Titans, which are both like masquerading as something other than trashy action, but they're definitely both just trashy action. Battleship, he's got a role in 2012. You keep rolling.
I forgot about that.
He plays a tough guy in A Million Ways to Die in the West, kind of like parodying himself. Walk Among the Tombstones, Taken 3, Nonstop. Hang on, it keeps going. Run All Night. Then he does a Monster Calls, which is pretty good.
How many of these movies have you seen?
Some. He does Most. The Commuter in 2018. I've seen that.
I had to ride a train.
And finally, he shows up this year in the movie coming out next week, Cold Pursuit, which... guys, if you want to see what Liam Neeson is up to in 2019, let me just read you the synopsis of Cold Pursuit. A snowplow driver seeks revenge against the drug dealers he thinks killed his son. The drug dealer's name is Viking.
Did you kill my son?
No, I think you did.
Like, that's Liam in a nutshell the last 10 years. It's just like, I don't know where it happened that he just decided this. Like, I guess Taken was an accident.
Right. He's probably just having fun, right? He's probably just having fun and making money and kind of knows that he's never going to... I mean, he could do... We always talk about that guy that gets in this random big director's movie and could do it. Like, he could all of a sudden pop up in Dune.
Yeah.
You know, Denis Villeneuve's casting all these huge people. Like, Liam could pop in it and just be, like, awesome, you know?
He's a great actor. And something you said to me the other day on the phone I thought was really relevant. What you said is he was always famous, but he's a star now.
Yeah.
Which is different. He wasn't a star before...
He was Oscar Schindler. That's literally all he really was before this.
Yeah, I mean, a movie like Rob Roy is like, I remember the VHS box at the store. My dad saw it, I think. But like, that wasn't a movie that stuck out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He was a real actor. Like, people looked at him that way. It wasn't. Yeah. He wasn't a popcorn guy.
He is legitimately only a popcorn guy.
He's on the cover of these movies, The Commuter, like Cold Pursuit. It's a Liam Neeson movie. That's what it is.
I like to take the bus.
Okay, so buy or sell. It's just this idea that you and I kind of came up with yesterday when talking about the episode. Talking about Liam Neeson's career and Frank Grillo's career. More so Frank Grillo than Liam Neeson because, you know, Liam Neeson's, like we just said, a star. But
he's also kind of done it all already. Like, if Liam Neeson, like, kind of retired, like, I think we'd all just be like, all right.
Well, that's why I wanted to throw him in is because, like, okay, so do you buy or sell Liam Neeson? If you are a stock company that buys and sells and trades actors' careers,
okay,
do you still invest in Liam Neeson's career?
I do, and the reason being the 10 years that he spent doing this has solidified him as enough of a star that he doesn't really need to do anything else right now to be still considered A-list. And he's got about 5 more years of kind of what we're talking about, where he could be in Tarantino or like one of these like big director's movies. I mean, Nolan is still making big movies. He's a Nolan favorite. Like, you could see him in one of those movies in an Oscar-winning role. So I think I'm buying Liam Neeson.
You know what's kind of fascinating about Liam Neeson is, like, in full disclosure, guys, we were actually going to cover Arctic on this show, the new Mads Mikkelsen movie that comes out tomorrow or Friday, but we decided against it because it didn't feel completely appropriate. So Mads just came out with this new Netflix movie called Polar or whatever.
Sweet, actually.
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool. Yeah. I watched it, and mainly because of our fans talking about it. And then he came out with Arctic. And you kind of look at his career, and he was also just in massive movies last year.
Doctor Strange and Star Wars, both in 2016.
Yeah, I mean, 2016, excuse me. And so, like, you look at a guy like that whose career, it seemed like, was only going up, but then it's like a few years later, he's still kind of he never really, like, broke through to that star level, even though Mads is definitely a star. Do you know what I'm saying?
Totally. I mean, he's, like, one of those guys that has a face you recognize.
Right.
But he only did, like, it doesn't matter how big the thing you're in is if you don't follow it up with other things that fit that. So, like, him playing a weirdo villain, like Dormammu, like, his characters in those
Caecilius.
Two movies. Oh, he plays Caecilius.
Probably shouldn't have told you that, since you keep calling him Dormammu.
I can't. Oh, yeah.
Dormammu. But I actually would invest more in Liam's career than Mads is right now, even though Mads was just in a Marvel movie.
Yeah, I mean, Liam took the thing that made him a star again and wrote it. Whether or not any of the movies we just talked about are good, most of which are not, he rode that train. So now when the people think of him, he's got like an association. When you think about Mads, you're like, he's kind of a tough guy villain.
Right. I said, like, most people still think of Casino Royale.
Yeah, like that's basically, and like you can't really say there's a role he should be. Now I never watched Hannibal. People love that show.
Oh yeah, people love that show.
Yeah. Now on the other side, you got Grillo. Now Frank Grillo, if you're asking me if I'm buying or selling, my answer is absolutely I'm buying, and there's no hesitation for me on Grillo. And the reason is because if you think about it, Grillo fits a bill really, really specifically that we don't have a lot of right now.
Is he like 1/8 something else? Is he like Hispanic or
I think so.
Yeah, something. Because he doesn't just look like a white dude.
No. There's a couple things going for him. The first one is he's either got super like a superhuman genetics or he's totally willing to juice. I'm not sure which it is. But for like late 40s, he's got the most ridiculous physique of anyone. Like the recent pictures that he posted on Instagram of himself, he has 17 abs. He looks like he's got veins on his veins. Like he's so yoked. It's actually like offensive in some ways. Like people can't look like that.
Right.
And he seems to be willing to do that.
Sweet.
Now, he's great in Warrior, which is a movie that every year seems to be kind of picking up a little bit more credibility. People love that movie. And every year it seems like people like it a little more. And I'll tell you the thing that has going for it the most for me. He's got a small but at least significant role in two great movies in the MCU. And those movies are kind of evergreen at this point. Like, they're going to be watched a lot for the next 10 years.
Did he die, though?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. He's still in two good ones. Like, think about in 5 years when people are going back and continuing to rewatch those old movies, he'll just keep coming up as a face. So he's got a face right now that's going to be very recognizable to people. And he's, like, playing a tough guy in those movies. So he gets to kind of just translate that into the career that he's taking right now.
Okay, so I don't disagree with you on everything that you're saying, but he's full-blooded Italian. Thank you very much, Belford. He's 53 years old. And he's finally, he's just finally kind of breaking through, right?
Yeah.
I actually sell Grillo.
Okay.
I don't think that he's maybe, I don't think he's maybe reached his climax.
Yeah.
Maybe he does like one more huge movie, or like maybe he's in the next Nolan movie as like a decent sized character. But for some reason, as much as I like Grillo, and you know I love me some Frank Grillo, I just don't find him that unique.
Yeah.
I don't feel that he brings something to the role that no one else could.
Yeah.
I feel like there's other guys out there that are in their 50s that are yoked and kind of like frat boy dudes that could still do what Grillo does.
Yeah.
Not that I don't enjoy Grillo, and I hope his career does keep going and I hope he does stay famous. But for me, I'm buying Liam and I'm selling Grillo.
My last point on Grillo and why I think he fits.
Uh-huh.
He is that guy. That's the difference between him and some of these guys.
Oh, he is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I think I probably told this story on the show before. I've met Grillo a few times now. The first time I met him was working at the bar we used to work at together. And I served him drinks. And this is a true story. I remember I was like, what do you want? And he's like, give me a beer flight. And I was like, okay, anything you like? He's like, it's all good. And I was like, anything you don't want? He leans over to me and gets in my ear and he goes, just don't give me any dirty pussy. And I was like, okay, I'll get you some drinks, sir. That was the first time I met Grillo.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah. And then a couple years later, I was doing the premiere for Kingdom, which is that MMA show. And I was like, who's the toughest guy on set? He's like, they're all pussies, man. He's like, I could kick any of their asses. Maybe Jonas, but nah, he's a pussy too. And he's like, he's just like, they're none of these guys are fighters. And I had so much fun hanging out with the guy at the after party. He was just like a treat, just like super friendly.
Just like a dude's dude, chill.
He's got like the right energy to play the characters that he plays. And I think as long as he stays in his lane, like for instance, if Cruise was to announce that Grillo was a villain or a henchman in the next Mission Impossible, would you be surprised?
No.
Not at all.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. As long as he stays in his lane.
Yeah.
And he continues being the awesome guy on set that I know he is. I hope he's successful. I want his career to keep going on. I would not invest a movie in Frank Grillo, but I do agree with everything that you're saying. Michael Bowker, who do you buy, Frank Grillo or Scott Eastwood? 100% Frank Grillo.
Grillo. I spoke to Grillo's PR yesterday, and they're willing to have him come on. So,
yeah.
We have to confirm that, obviously, but I think when Donnybrook comes out, which is that's his next big action movie he's coming out with, I think we should probably try and cover it and get Grillo on the show.
Oh, I mean, duh. Yeah. Done. So we got 8 minutes left today. I'm going to skip past production development. The biggest thing here is to just mainly talk about Joe Carnahan. I know you like Carnahan. I mean, I like Carnahan. You like Carnahan. Is there anything you want to say really quickly about him?
He's just kind of unsung in the sense that
I think he's incredibly underrated.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, okay, so what's the biggest movie he's done in terms of, is it A-Team?
It's probably Smoke and Aces or The A-Team. The A-Team, maybe just because everyone in it at the time was, like, riding
high. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
That's what I would guess. fastest. Like, it felt like it had the biggest budget. Smoke and Aces is like an above average, you know, crime ensemble movie.
And then this movie is just forgotten about, unfortunately.
Yeah. And so he's kind of one of these guys that, like, he's pretty talented. Like, people like his style. He just hasn't had, like, a big action movie yet. But, like, he could have one next year. Yeah. So he's got a movie called Boss Level coming out, I think, with Grillo and Mel Gibson that he directed. Yeah.
Sweet. would you have Mel come in the studio?
I wouldn't.
I would feel like a little uncomfortable. I'd be a little scared.
He's a Holocaust denier. Like, that's, oh, yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, it's too much.
I mean, I'm Jewish, but it's just a weird thing.
It's too much.
Like, if you're a Holocaust denier, like, I feel uncomfortable in the same room as you.
Yeah, I don't want to talk to you about the flat earth. What
my religion or background
is.
Yeah.
I know. I was thinking the same. Like, even despite not even thinking about the Holocaust thing, I was like, there's no way I bring him on the show.
Yeah. I mean, I love Gibson's career, and I'm a fan, and, like, who knows? If his agent calls me and says, hey, do you want Mel on the show? Like,
it's probably hard to say no.
I'd probably rethink it, but, like, the way I feel about it now is I would...
It's very uncomfortable. It'd be too weird. I'm glad we're on the same page.
Yeah.
We'll just breeze through critical and box office here. Open Road Films made this movie for $25 million. It had a soft release December 11th, 2011, and a wide release January 27th, 2012. It grossed 51 domestic, 25 worldwide for a grand total of $77 million, making three times its budget. Pretty good investment.
Yeah.
Opening weekend, it made $19 million. It was number one. It's got a 6.8 on IMDb. All critics on Rotten give it a 79. Top give it a 65, and audience give it a 61. Now, I actually understand why the audience did this. It's because we were expecting... Most people didn't watch this movie when it came out.
No.
And they watched it after they watched Taken, most of them.
Yep.
And so I think what everyone was expecting was Liam Neeson to go out and beat the shit out of some wolves and have, like, it just be, like, a total badass and then live at the end and, like, you know what I mean?
Totally. Also, man, this movie, like, I don't know if you feel the same way about this, but you and I use the phrase Redbox generation a lot. It's the difference between movies that came out 10 years ago and movies that have come out sort of since we've transitioned over to straight to video and VOD being normal. I only heard about this movie for the first time on Netflix. I didn't even know that it existed when it came out. Like, and the cover of it and, like, everything about it, it looks like one of those movies from that time.
Oh, it looks, it looks like
you're unsure if this was a real movie or not. And so, you know, word of mouth will often turn these movies into cult classics, but it's hard for these movies to succeed like this. If there isn't some other actor or some other factor, like a big director or something huge about it. So there was like no buzz. There was no like, oh, Liam Neeson is shredded and takes his shirt off in the snow, or, you know, Liam Neeson does a crazy stunt, or Liam Neeson turns into an Oscar-worthy performance. Like,
yeah, it was just like a movie.
This movie that came out where he fought wolves. Like, and nobody else in the movie's a star.
And he wasn't at the level of, like, Liam Neeson that he is right now.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Like, A-Team was not very good, and that was the year before, so.
It was not good at all.
No.
So we don't really have any AMA questions. What were you going to say?
I wasn't going to say. I thought Steven was going to call in Liam's agent.
Is that? I did think he was, but I don't think we actually have enough time.
Oh, okay.
I mean, do you?
Maybe. I don't know.
I did mention it at the top of the show, but...
Marissa, just let us know, even if he just only has a minute to call in for us here. We'll continue going with the show. So let's talk favorite line. I think that's fair, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I mean, mine's hands down. I wrote the entire speech that he has with his father down.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. It's like...
Once more into the fray.
Live and die on this day, live and die on this. But it's the first part of it is... I mean, what I actually love about it, I mean, I love the Once More in the Fray and the last good fight I'll ever know, but what I actually love is, like, he was a cliched Irish motherfucker when he... No, that's what I was... Yeah, I just think you let it go. He's, like, a drunker, a brawler, all that stuff, never shed a tear, it's a weakness everywhere. But he had things for poem, poetry, reading, blah, 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 quoting them. And what I love, he goes, reading them, quoting them, probably thought it was a way of rounding him off. You know, his way of apologizing, yeah. I guess. I think, I just, like, the writing in this movie is so good. It's actually, like, so good.
Yeah, I was going to say, so that is one of the ones that really stuck with me. I love the scene where he talks about dying. And then I also really love the scene when Diaz decides to he's sitting there and he's like, my name's John. And he starts crying.
Yeah, I wrote that. Like, I wrote my name's John in my notes.
Yeah, and they each introduce themselves. And he's like, of course that's your name.
Yeah.
He's like, look at that. I feel like that's all for me.
Like, just look at it, Johnny.
Just look at it, Johnny. Like, it's just... I loved that whole interaction. I loved it. I just thought it was so good. And, like, it. And that's the kind of thing when I say this is kind of the wilderness survival movie to warrior sports movie.
Yeah.
It's those moments. It's those moments where I think about if you and I were making a movie, we were, like, writing it and directing it together, whatever. We were going to, like, go for it, kind of. Like, is this cheesy or not? Like, right. Should we try this or not? And I think the answer for the most part is, as long as you put your heart into the moment, like, you believe in it, and you believe these guys can pull it off, and that it's an important moment for your characters,
yeah,
and you have a good instinct that it's pulled off well, it's never cheesy. The people that think cliches are cliches and cheesy is cheesy are just people that want to criticize. It's the people that would give a bad review to Warrior calling it a stereotype.
Right. It's like when those cliches are executed correctly, which this one completely is, it's beautiful, it's awesome, and like it's so many people's favorite moment in the show.
I totally agree. It was such a good moment. It was such a surprise moment.
The three categories I feel like we don't even need to cover because of my thesis, saying that it's the most realistic movie we've ever covered on AMA.
Oh, I don't know. I think I go middle category.
Really?
Why? This movie's ridiculously legit.
How?
Because it's just them fighting wolves.
But they all die. They kill literally two wolves, one wolf the whole time. That's it? And it's when they use their shotgun shells?
It's just the tone of it to me feels like a kind of a classic good bad action. Like there's like I connect to it more than I don't connect, but I wouldn't fully feel comfortable showing this to somebody like, hey, here's 10 great movies, watch this one and you won't laugh a little bit.
Because I never laughed. I said that this is the most realistic movie we've ever covered on the show.
Yeah, I mean, I heard you.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm just shocked by you. I'm shocked and appalled.
Look,
but
man,
I understand.
It's okay
understand.
To have different attitudes.
I get it.
You know?
I get it.
So a couple pieces of business to talk about. I guess we have one less thing to cover, and that's going to be called
the pitch.
Okay, so a few orders of business. Number one, we are covering next week on the show
the Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, baby.
25 year anniversary. I never thought we'd ever cover this movie on the show.
No, and I'm so excited to cover it on the show. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. We've got a very special guest that I think... Can we announce now? I guess there's no reason not to.
I mean, if he's coming...
He's confirmed.
He confirmed?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Yeah, we are having the Godfather, Drew McQueenie, a friend of ours from the Schmodown community, one of the great, great movie critics and writers out there today.
He's got a really, really cool personal story about Frank Darabont and this script for Shawshank specifically that we'll talk about on the show.
So we're excited to have him on to feature Drew. Also coming up, that you mentioned this week on the show, on the Action Guys over on Collider Podcasts, we're talking about Wilderness Survival. Next week we have kind of a crazy episode.
Oh my gosh, I'm like nervous about it.
It relates to the Shawshank because it's Shawshank's my fourth favorite movie of all time. Drew and I are going to be doing each of our respective top five favorite movies episode.
God, I'm so nervous.
Well, I don't even know what the format's going to be, but we are going to be talking extensively about each of our top five favorite films. And I have a feeling there's some crossover in the form of Dirk Diggler, but...
Yeah, there's definitely a crossover in the form of Dirk Diggler. Do we want to mention anything else about an idea that we've been throwing around, or do you not want to do that yet?
I think I will, actually.
Yeah?
I'm going to talk about that and the other thing that...
Okay.
You know,
we've got about a minute, so let's do it.
Yeah. So the first thing is... The Dark Knight watch-along.
Yes.
Drew and I talked about a drunk watch-along we're doing for The Dark Knight. For health reasons, I'm taking a little bit of time away from alcohol.
We both are.
Yeah. And it's not like I'm just stopping drinking forever, but a little bit of extended hiatus. There was some health stuff that had to go on. So once that wraps up, we will do our drunk watch-along. Or if it feels like it's taking too long to get there, we will come up with an alternative way to do it. We'll just do a watch-along of Dark Knight. We'll find a way to make it awesome. Just so you guys know, that is happening, but that's the delay on that one.
Yep.
The second one is for the patreon.com/teamaction, the Andrew Guy Appreciation page. Drew and I are talking about starting to actually watch the AMA films together on a live stream weekly.
Yes.
And we're going to try this out the first time coming up. If you follow us on Twitter... at Team Action Show, at Ben Bateman Media, at Andrew Guy, you'll see, we'll announce the date, check the Facebook groups of when we're going to do it, and I think probably we're going to try to watch The Shawshank Redemption this weekend together on a live stream.
I mean, I didn't want to, like, put my foot in my mouth in case we're too busy, but that would be amazing.
We're going
to
try.
Yeah, we're going to try, and that's the idea. Maybe, like, twice a month, we're going to try to watch the movie with you guys that we will be following the covering the following week, and it'll probably just be at the $5 tier.
Yeah,
something
it'll be a
really
$5
fun
tier,
to do.
And you guys could be in the live chat with us. So we're gonna try it. If it's not this week, it'll be the next. But that's a thing we're trying to do because there's, you know, Patreon content that we want to start kind of knocking out. And yep. Schmodown Season 6 opens this Friday. You'll see the New York Lab event. It's going to be a crazy year for Schmodown. So, you know, you'll hear some Schmodown reactions and things like that from myself and this trader. And that's going to wrap us up. So thank you guys so much. I apologize for being late. Great movie. I love y'all.
And we'll see you guys next week.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Bye, everybody.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.